for more than 2,500 years, the Buddha, you know, the Buddhist Dharma has been kind of going. Yet the very essence of the Dharma isn't found outside ourselves, but in actually understanding, using the Dharma to look at the contents of our own minds. Because that's actually where all, that's where the world is. The world's not out there in what we're doing in the coronavirus or whatever it is. The world's really our own minds, because that's what's making a world. We each make our own unique world, and often wonder why our world isn't in harmony with all these other worlds. Because in a way, we have our own reality, our own way of things, of looking at things. And often it conflicts with other people's worlds. And unless we understand our world, we actually neither understand our own minds or understand other people's minds, because we're not seeing really what's going on. You know, and seeing really the Four Noble Truths in our minds. You know, what's the source of our suffering and distress? What's arising and passing? What are we pushing away? What do we want? What do we crave? What do we despise? And I was actually reading this from a very nice talk where Master Koten gave on this very theme. And it's to recognize the fact that most people have a quiet, underlying, subtle but real sense of despair, in the sense that there's an emptiness there. Because when you just look at it in terms of birth and death, it has a meaningless quality to it. Just like I remember talking to someone who was having a real problem in that they always live for their children and they outlive their children. And it was like, okay, what was the meaning of all that? You know, where's the meaning in my life? What's going on? When everything vanishes, where was the meaning? You know, and there's suffering inherent in birth because it has to fall apart. You know, that's why birth, old age, disease, and death were the very teachers that made the Buddha seek enlightenment. You know, so there's suffering implicit in birth. There's suffering implicit. Just, I remember being a child and suffering intensely at some things, which all children do. They have nice, unfiltered suffering. And unfiltered happiness, too. And it's not like there's no happiness. But you can't escape the suffering part. To find out what is real is kind of the point of training. Suffering is, we're often being given things we don't want and not being given what we do want. And there's suffering in this. And that's why the Buddha said, you know, the First Noble Truth really is not that everything is suffering, but life is unsatisfactory. Because where is the satisfactory part? Yes, you can have something satisfying for a while, but it doesn't stay satisfying. And we crave, and we all long for something solid and real. I can even remember when I first started to practice, I felt like I'd like to get to a place where life wasn't so difficult. I didn't need to make seemingly all this effort. It's now, all these many years later, I realized that was not what I'm ever going to get. You know, I'm never going to have a place that, you know, there is an effort required. And it's just realizing there's no problem in me, in the effort and the fact that you're finding some things difficult and you still have things to do. As I remember, Reverend Master Hario had a quote line I always liked. He said, remember, you're always doing something. Don't get caught up. There's no, whatever you're doing, it's something. And if you stop distinguishing between them so much, you know, you can realize it's fine, whatever you're doing. When we really study the contents of our lives and our minds, we can actually start seeing a pattern coming through. And it's the very thing that attracted me to Buddhism, was seeing that there's something much deeper going on, that there are, like taking refuge in the Sangha, you can find people who are not being bound by suffering. Just like I always like quoting the fellow in the concentration camp who was filled with joy, even though he's in a concentration camp. And the fellow in the concentration camp finally realizes, I have to find out, what's this fellow, how's he managing to see all this suffering and still find joy? And the fellow said to him, even though there's always suffering, there's nothing special going on. And we think of things special, but hell, you know, somebody I remember describing to me just the intense physical difficulties of going through a bone marrow transplant in which your whole immune system is taken away. So for a while, you're living with that immune system. The amount of pain and distress they went through was amazing. But on the other hand, they realized they were actually a lot of the times filled with gratitude. The pattern arises that we can start seeing what actually frees us and seeing how we make the suffering and seeing the very things that free us from suffering. Like when we act with, despite other people's suffering, the compassion for them has a very positive quality, that connection to others, that feeling like we're all in this together. Just like I always think, like if you were one of those things that always sounds depressing, it's like people being trapped in a cave. And I realize the difference, huge differences of people being trapped in a cave with a whole bunch of other people or being trapped in a cave by yourself. And actually just being with others frees you from a lot of the difficulty that you would have in feeling, you know, the connection to others. And the whole practice of the Dharma of generosity, kindness, compassion helps realize that there's a deeper place than our suffering. There's a deeper place than us. And we can see a pattern coming out of it of how we're making the suffering and how this will free us from suffering. And we can see examples of people who are freed of suffering and realize we don't have to be doing this. You know, there is a way out. But we only see that when we're really willing to be still and present with what's going on, and we're willing to not get so caught up in it. So we can actually see, and the way the pattern comes up is we can see how it keeps coming up, that each form of suffering is not new. They're friends that have been echoing, beckoning to us throughout our lives, our various greeds, fears, anxieties, worries. Oh, I want this, I need that. And I think Molly's joining the talk a bit. But, hi Molly. Suddenly I have a cat. Who at times sounds like she's suffering intensely. It's like, why am I not being petted? Why am I alone? What are you doing? Why don't you take care of what's really important? Me. But the more you can sit still, the more you can see the contents of your mind and heart and start seeing what will actually lead to freedom and what will lead to suffering. And it is what brought probably in a way all of you to Buddhism, is knowing that in a way being self-absorbed and basically selfish doesn't work very well, and that we need to find something more. Something that will free us. And the what really frees us is studying what's going on and seeing really what are we doing that's making this world that isn't, that's depressing. And the precepts and mindfulness will help us see the pattern, see what we're doing, because it's not isolated. You know, just like somebody who gets frustrated in traffic, it keeps coming up as a pattern. And it won't just be in traffic. That person will have lots of other situations that they have the same reaction to. And often one of the delusions we have in training is the fact that we think there's an easy solution to all of this, an easy way to unravel it, an easy way to do something, and that somehow when a problem comes up, a difficulty comes up, something is wrong that I cannot solve it. Well, a lot of training is seeing the pattern and realizing the way we try to solve it is often the very problem that we're doing. What do I mean by that? Well, let's say you know, something comes up and you find it really difficult, frustrating, and hard. And a normal thing you can kind of go is, well, why isn't training working? Why am I finding this so frustrating, difficult, and hard? And you really have to look at yourself. How have I made this so hard? And then be willing to put up with the fact that there's no way to make it easy other than slowly unraveling the pattern and the pieces that you've done. to make that so hard for yourself? Like, I really require this. I need this. I won't put up with that. And unless you really look at that, you can't be free of it. And unless you're willing to have patience with it and realize the letting go is not something you do once, or that there's something, some way to let something go in the sense other than in the moment. All letting go is not done, just like I can't say what I'll have trouble letting go of tomorrow or in 10 minutes. But right now I can let go, and I can make a commitment to follow the Dharma and to not make whatever's coming up a problem, try to help the karma. But I can't stop the fact that something bothers me, or I hate this, or I don't want that, or I feel awful. But you can let go and just bring yourself back to what's going on. How am I making this? And how do I work at letting go of this and keep coming? And as you keep doing that, you see better the pattern, how, because whatever it is, it's been a way of deludedly looking at things for a while. The way people can deludedly look at the news a while, people often say how awful the world is now. And I kind of go, I guarantee you, I had studied history. It's never been better in the big picture. I mean, not just like people get very upset about refugee crises. And it's very depressing when I read about how off refugees in the world and how awful their conditions are and all the rest. Except if you look at history, there never used to be refugee crises because nobody cared. Seriously, there wasn't like, wow, what happens to this group or that group? Basically, everyone ignored it. People just suffered, died, and it wasn't even covered much. You know, that was history. The fact that it's actually a step forward that we now are trying to kind of take responsibility for some of those things, or at least realize in a way we all should care about these things. But also not to get covered up and think that there's a, that this isn't samsara, that greed, hate, and delusion. And if we understand the greed, hate, and delusion in ourselves, we actually aren't surprised when we see it in others. When you actually are shocked at somebody else's behavior, part of it is the fact that you haven't really looked at yourself as well as you should have, because the greed, hate, and delusion is in you too. You know, you may not act upon it like somebody who's deeply deluded, but it's there. Just like I remember just wanting simple solution to problems and doing it. But the letting go in training is the letting go, trusting the Dharma that there's no problem there, that all we have to do is keep, it's like in meditation. Most of you, because you've been meditating, most of you for a while, many of you for many years, none of you sit down and are surprised that your mind is busy frequently. And you realize there's no solution other than just bringing itself back each time it wanders. Well, the same thing with all your greed, hate, and delusion. Shouldn't be surprised that it's there. And all you can do is just bring yourself back and just try to understand it, see it, find a way not to act upon it. Same way as I try not to act upon the patterns of thoughts that'll fill me in the meditation period. Like, I don't have to figure this out now. I don't have to concentrate on this. I can just let this go. You know, it's why we understand part of training is like, you know, there's a line from the rules for meditation. When the opposites arise, the Buddha mind is lost. Actually, I always feel that's not the best way to either translate or maybe write it like Dogen did. The opposites always arise. We're always making choices that are in the opposites. Good and evil are opposites. Right and wrong are opposites. Right effort and wrong effort are opposites. It's clinging to the opposites that's the problem. The fact that we always have to make choices isn't the problem. It's clinging to it that's the problem. And when we see how we're making a problem out of it by clinging, well, things should be right. I should be right. I should get this correct. Without understanding, if we understand the nature of our mind, we see, well, it's filled with all this delusion. Why am I surprised that I act upon it sometimes, or I have problems with it? Kind of treating something as important that's not. I'm getting caught up in this, getting caught up in that. But if we sit still, the pattern emerges when we act in the right way, just like the precepts point us to a deeper truth. that's beyond the opposites. By practicing the precepts, we find what's deeper than good and evil. But we can't find that as long as we're acting, getting caught up in evil. You know, in each being, we have to have simple, like, just like we have both things we find easy to let go of and things that we find hard. And often we look at others and go, why are they having problems letting go of that? I don't have a problem letting go of that. But that's the nature of things, that we're each a unique collection of both good and bad karma, merit and demerit, delusion and enlightenment. So even somebody who is a mess sometimes will act with great enlightenment, and somebody who is doing well will make a mess of things. You know, we look cynically at the world because we often see the problems, but a good example, I remember listening not long ago to some interviews with all these people who, when the back in 89, when the freeway collapsed in Ophir, Maine, the biggest problem from the earthquake was that whole collapsed freeway section. And there was immediate instructions for people to stay away from this fallen freeway. But there were actually people trapped on the freeway. And a whole bunch of people just jumped in there and risk their life and rescued a lot of those people. When we look at delusion, we don't realize there's always those people who are doing that too. You know, even though maybe at home they're a mess, but there they were, a bodhisattva. And that's why an important part of training is realizing that the arising of our greed, hate, and delusion is the very opportunity to train. There's nothing to train. What we're training is our greed, hate, and delusion. If we don't have it, we're not training. We're enlightened. But the very arising of those things is giving us this opportunity. And to sit still with it is to see deeper what's going on, to see the deeper pattern in our lives and pointing us to how we can free ourselves. Where if each problem's an isolated problem and we don't see how we're doing it, then we actually will never advance very far. Because the you know, you're not solving a specific greed. You're working with a specific greed, but you also have to understand what the self being greedy is, what the self being proud is, what the self being despairing is. The causes of despair may be different, but when you understand better the pattern, you can actually free yourself from the pattern and see ways. So when it comes up in a different way, you're not surprised. And you can keep working at it. And when you have to keep working at letting go, each time it comes up, you're letting go of these patterns, seeing it and seeing what's the way out. And what's the Dharma saying? What's the way out? Often the Dharma has a very simple teaching that applies directly to what's going on. Greedy for something, and the Dharma will say, actually, it's just a feeling. And even if you satisfy it, it doesn't really mean anything. You know, the same way as you've all had endless good meals in your life. Right now, if you're hungry, what difference did it make that you ate all those other good meals? Where are they now? All they are dreams. And the more we look away from ourselves and don't want to see our own greed, hate, and delusion, the more it binds us and the darker the world gets. When somebody finds the world very dark, it means they're not willing to look at themselves, and then they're making a problem out of it, and then everything can be overwhelming. Because that's why somebody who is deeply deluded, everything is happening to them. An example of that I always like giving, I remember someone came to me, and he's kind of mentioning, who I didn't know, never saw before or since, but he came by the temple and he's telling me, you know, he's a very good healthcare worker, but he keeps having a problem with heroin, and periodically he'll start using heroin and completely mess up his life and trash everything. And then he pulls himself together, and luckily he's a good enough worker that they seem to always be, he says they always hire him back, and he gets, you know, he goes back, and then he does it again, and he does it again, and he does it again. And he's kind of going to me, you know, life doesn't make any sense to me. Does it make any sense to you? He kind of goes to me. And I kind of go, makes perfect sense to me. you know, in fact, it makes perfect sense to me how you're making suffering. There's nothing even complicated or delusional other than what he has to understand is what are the triggers that keep coming up that force him, you know, what feelings make him make that leap into doing something destructive. Just like often people don't want to look at themselves. I was listening to somebody give a talk on addictive behavior, and she kind of very nicely put, every morning I would wake up and say, I'm not going to do this. And then I would do this, you know, and her, this case was kind of basically get involved with someone she shouldn't get involved with or have a drink too, she mentioned when she was an alcoholic. And she would always say it, and then things would kick in and she would just fall into the thing. And a lot of it is just making it deep enough, kind of seeing is not understanding commitment enough. Because if you're really committed to something, you will let it go. And if you don't make the commitment, you won't. Same way as I remember somebody telling me how they couldn't even picture not smoking. And I said to them, imagine you were pregnant. Would you smoke? And she said, oh, no, I would never smoke if I was pregnant. And I kind of go, so you could stop smoking. It's just you're not motivated enough to stop smoking. If it hurts you, you'll only stop smoking if it'll hurt fetus, the baby you're bringing in. And as long as, you know, you don't matter, then you'll keep doing it. And then if we look at, but if we start looking at the way things are going, we can actually see charity, benevolence, sympathy, compassion coming from the very events in our daily life, coming from people around us. That often when we're caught up in things, we don't even notice. But when we look more with the eyes of a Buddha, when we look without being so wanting to deal with it, we find help coming from all sorts of places and things. All things start pointing to the truth. Well, when we're caught up in delusion, everything points to life. For instance, life is miserable and there's no hope, or I'm a failure, I'm a mess, or all these other delusions. Just like if we want to tell ourselves how awful we're doing, not surprisingly, we'll feel awful. And we'll think, God, I'm really doing poorly. Well, if you tell yourself that, it is. If you just trust that it actually in a way doesn't, this is all part of the path, then you can actually start being freed from it. Just like the Bodhisattva vows, they begin with rescuing the contents of your own mind. You're not going to free all other beings from greed, hate, and delusion if you can't free yourself from greed, hate, and delusion. If you don't see how you're making it, how are you going to help others? How are you going to rescue anyone else? You know, it's the blind leading the blind then. You have to be willing to see your karma clearly and see through the greed, hate, and delusion and realize there's no problem there. It's just ways we have been doing it. Just like if we can't be still and compassionate to the things that come up in our own minds and hearts, how are we going to be still and compassionate to everyone else? Wow, it's like unique to us. Unless you really think you're the worst person around, it's everywhere. And the odds are, usually anybody listening to a Dharma talk is doing a lot better than an awful lot of other sentient beings who would never even think of listening to a Dharma talk or hearing the Dharma. The Dharma doesn't even mean anything to you. You just hear it and kind of go, you know, what does that have to do with me? Just like I remember somebody very nicely telling me that they took a friend to the priory, and that friend kind of said, after attending a Sunday Dharma talk, now, why are you doing this? And then the same friend had a serious illness, and suddenly all of this started to resonate with them and it started to become meaningful to them. But when they're just caught up in their greed, hate, and delusion, they're not even interested. They're going to just keep pursuing a desire, thinking, wow, this is fun. I like this. Life is working until it doesn't.